Julia Gillard was Australia's Prime Minister, and since she got knocked off from the leadership of the Labor Party, she's been all around the world and has picked up on a number of projects for her post-political career. One of them is to promote more women and people from ethnically diverse communities to get into politics, which is a lot easier to say than it is to do. Former Australian Prime Minister Julia Gillard joins me in the studio to talk about Next Generation and an internship together with the winner of that very position, the Next Generation intern. Julia Gillard, good morning to you.
Good morning, John. Great to be with you.
Haven't seen you for absolutely ages. You seem to be enjoying your post-political life.
I've had a lifetime association with Emily's List. You might remember that the much-loved Joan Kerner brought Emily's List to Australia, having learned about it in the US. It's an organisation to support Labor women. And so I was delighted when Emily's List suggested that they would create a scholarship in my name. Nice to have that happen while you're still alive, rather than have someone do it when you've passed on to the other side. And each year, a fabulous young woman takes that scholarship and has a range of experiences, but does a terrific research project to feed back into the policy debate. And that's what we're launching here today. And I've got said fabulous young woman with me.
And we'll meet Stephanie in just a second. A few more things, though, about your post-political career. When you see what's happened since you departed from the Parliament, do you think we're getting worse at democracy?
Oh, I think the most tiresome phrase in the world is "it was better in my day," and so I absolutely never use it. I think things in democracies around the world have got more difficult over time. So it's not just us. No. It's not about our political personalities. It's about a set of broader issues. And it's got to do with the fragmentation to the way we get information that's been driven by the new media landscape. It's got to do with some of the challenging issues, things like climate change, which aren't easily resolved through democratic politics and are quintessentially global issues.
The rise of populism throughout so many countries, some democratic, some not.
I think populism is a symptom of some of these underlying causes. I think this is an easy age in which to get people rallied around simple slogans, because the way in which people get information is so quick hit and then gone, and it's a much harder age to drive the deeper debates. I do spend a lot of time in the UK, and I think Brexit is a fantastic example of that. You know, you get a bus with a sign about hundreds of millions of pounds going into the NHS, and that cuts through. And every complex argument about the damage to the economy didn't. I think this is putting particular stresses and strains on public policy and parliamentarians as a result.
We'll have a bit of a chat in a moment, but let's meet Stephanie Milioni. She's the 2019 Julia Gillard Next Generation intern, and she has come into the studio together with the aforementioned former Prime Minister. Stephanie, congratulations. Good morning.
Thanks, John. Fantastic to be here.
Tell me what you're going to do with this opportunity that's presented to you.
So I'd really like to use this opportunity to speak more about how we can get more culturally diverse women in Parliament. So my report outlines 32 recommendations.
And if they
only
were 32.
Only 32. I've broken my consultant rule of only having 10 to 15 recommendations in a report.
And on a single page,
exactly.
Please.
But I think that if they were implemented, we would see more culturally diverse women in our parliaments.
This parliament is barely more diverse than the last one. I was astonished at the figures presented. 78% have an Anglo-Celtic background, 16% European, 4% non-European, and only a few of an Indigenous background. Changing that can't happen overnight, though, can it?
No, and it really requires quite substantial changes within parties. So making sure that we're recruiting culturally diverse members and attracting them to the party and participating in party activities, but also making sure that we're being quite proactive in the strategies that we adopt to pre-select more culturally diverse candidates in winnable seats.
Julia Gillard, if it's the men who are being asked to let some women through, isn't that just perpetuating the same problem? You actually need women who are some of the behind-the-scenes players as well, don't you?
Oh, absolutely. But we've had an affirmative action quota in the Labor Party for so long now. It was adopted in the early 1990s. And back then, the number of women in the federal parliament from Labor was at 14%, 1-4%, so dreadful. And the Conservative Conservatives were at the same dreadful level, and we can show that the adoption of the targets has led us to where Labor is in within striking distance of a 50% result, and the Conservatives are really at half of that. So it's showing you the profound effect that having a target, having a quota has. And we're now being challenged to think about this more broadly than gender in terms of other forms of diversity. So there's no doubt that it does make a difference, that it forces people to look beyond the usual suspects. And back in the 1990s, the usual suspects tended to be the next credentialed man, and broaden their gaze. And when they do that, they find talent elsewhere. And it's absolutely raised the standard of who Labor sends to the federal and state parliaments that we do have an affirmative action target. We've got to be a little bit careful that we don't fall for the analysis that we need to fix the women rather than fix the system. What was predominantly the problem with the Labor Party was that the system was an exclusionary one that didn't look for women. And when we resolved that through quotas and people needed to reach out for women, then there were talented women who were ready to go. There were some women who needed some more support to get to the stage where in their own minds and hearts and skills levels they felt ready to go, and Emily's List plays a big role in that. But, you know, if you look at the generation that Affirmative Action brought to the Australian Parliament, it included me, it included Tanya Plibersek, it included Nicola Roxon, and I don't think anybody could really look at these people and say, oh, you know, quota girl, how did she get there? I mean, obviously they got there because they've got an incredible contribution to make, and Tanya continues to make it.
Have you spoken to Bill Shorten since the loss of the election?
Oh, yes, I have.
What did you say?
I know what it's like to take a hard knock in politics. And so when people do take hard knocks, you always want to reach out and say, you know, for what it's worth, I've been there, I've lived through some of this experience. There is another side. You mightn't be able to see it quite so clearly today, but there will always be tomorrow.
What's the best single bit of advice you can give someone with their political training wheels on?
I think the best piece of advice for anybody contemplating politics is be clear about the sense of purpose, what it is that you want to do in politics. If you're not sustained by a grand cause, a passion, then it's all too hard. You know, you can't go into politics because you think people are going to slap you on the back and applaud your speeches. They might do that some days, but there'll always be the days that they're not listening or booing or not slapping you on the back, but being quite cruel to you. And I mean, you know, broadly, you get critiques from the public, critiques from the media, critiques from colleagues, certainly critiques from the other side of Parliament. So you need a sense of purpose that sustains you through that.
What's your legacy, do you think?
Well, in some ways, it's for others to judge, but I would hope that people would look at the period of time that I was Prime Minister and say that it made us a stronger, fairer country through initiatives like the NDIS, through the truth-telling and, I hope, healing which came with the Royal Commission into Child Sexual Abuse, through some of the major education reforms, as well as had us standing strong in the world with some of the advances we made in foreign policy.
Agree with all of that, but you left out probably the thing you're best known for. Did you leave that out deliberately?
You're thinking of the misogyny speech, are you?
I most certainly am.
I'm proud of that speech. There was a time, and I've said this before, where I was a little resentful that all those years in politics and all of that work and everything that we did, very productive on legislation, a government that got things done, that all of it apparently came down to one moment in time, one speech. But I'm reconciled with it now. And I understand that, you know, when people are writing things about me, including writing my obituary, hopefully in many years to come, it's going to feature in there.
And Stephanie, we've talked a lot about gender diversity, but ethnic diversity is the other area where you've studied intensely. And we've seen Gladys Liu being defended by her leader, the Prime Minister Scott Morrison, this last week, saying that it's racist to criticise her. Do you agree?
I'm not sure on the details of what's alleged against Gladys Liu, but I think if there are any ethical questions about any parliamentarian, they should be investigated. I was involved in campaigning for Jennifer Yang in the seat of Chisholm, and I was very happy to be involved in a campaign where we had two Asian Australian women contesting a seat for the federal parliament.
Terrific to have you here in the studio. Thank you, Julia Gillard, and congratulations, Stephanie Milioni.